Thank you for listening to the Fierce Audie podcast, where we talk about disability, quackery, parenting, and Jewish life.
So hello, everybody. My name is Aviva, and I am a longtime autistic advocate and activist. You may have seen me in NBC in 2019 about a bleach conspiracy to try to cure autistic kids, and on the Dr. Oz show. But I am here today to discuss CARD, Center for Autism and Related Disorders. Just about everybody knows this organization. They are one of the biggest ABA organizations there is out there. If you want to follow along, I do have my blog that I'm reading off of. The link there, and then I have another link on ABA, which discusses my experience. There are studies that disprove it, and the documents are on the blog if you want to follow along. I will be reading out some court documents and discussing their history. So here we go. And also, I will be stopping between sections for mental health breaks, because a lot of the stuff I do discuss on this podcast and any other episode can be heavy. So it is important that we take care of ourselves. Here we go. The history of CARD. CARD, or Center for Autism and Related Disorders, was founded on the basis that early intervention using applied behavior analysis can yield significant and meaningful clinical results for individuals with autism. Dr. Doreen Grampesha, PhD and doctor in behavior analysis, founded CARD in 1990. The first center was opened in Chino, California. She developed CARD's own ABA model to optimize individual outcome using comprehensive treatment curriculum for individuals diagnosed with autism. That is a quote from her. CARD has trained thousands of behavior technicians and behavior analysis with the CARD model and has treated tens of thousands of autistics. CARD has locations all over the United States and has a mission to help families from all backgrounds obtain top quality evidence-based treatment that results in meaningful progress for each individual. Everyone knows that ABA is abuse, and their success is based on how well a person can mask. Not everyone can do it. Yes, masking is privilege, but those who were able to do it, it caused so much PTSD and mental health issues that well into adulthood that they are undoing what they can. No therapy is provided by CARD. According to the University of Florida, CARD does not provide any therapy, interventions, diagnosis, etc. Examples of this are ABA, occupational therapy, speech therapy, or physical therapy. They only connect people with services. Privacy. According to their Gainesville, Florida location, CARD may be considered an agency of the state of Florida, and certain records of CARD may be considered public records, which are subject to the Florida record law. Under Florida law, email addresses are public records. The mailing lists shared with any other agency and or individual or entity outside of CARD, unless required by law. Not all of clients' information is confidential. If this is true in Florida, it could be true in other states. So I'm going to read to you the letter that was from the Florida Department of Education. 2, District School Superintendent, from Dr. Michael Grego. Subject: Section 1004.55, Florida Statutes Related to Public Records. The 2011 Florida Legislature passed House Bill 579, an act related to public records. Governor Rick Scott signed this bill into law on June 24, 2011. This legislation amends a section of 1004.55 Florida Statute pertaining to public record exemptions for the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, CARD. An exemption from public record requirements applies for all records that relate to a client of regional Autism Center who receives the service of center or participates in center activities or the client's family. The release of specified confidential and exempt information by a center under certain circumstances. Personal identifying information of a donor or prospective donor to a regional autism center if such a donor or prospective donor wishes to remain anonymous. In specific situations, card records may be released to physicians, attorneys, and governmental entities if authorized by the client, in response to a subpoena or persons authorized by the court, to a qualified researcher, State Board of Education, or the Florida Board of Governors if redacted and deemed necessary by the director. Under the guise of research, they can release any of the kids' information to as long as they're a researcher. You have no control over your own records. This is scary. These kids are not old enough to give consent. So the state is doing it for them. But it's Florida, but imagine if this happens in other states too. I couldn't find it in other states. It doesn't mean it didn't happen. We're gonna take a quick mental health break. Remember to take your meds, drink your water, use the restroom if you need it, and stretch. Research. CARD has been involved with ABA research. They are investigating ways to make ABA more efficient, effective, and accessible. Nowhere does it say that they are making therapy to benefit the autistic person, just indistinguishable from their peers. In a 2017 study, CARD researchers investigated that the impact of treating the treatment setting on clinical outcomes, finding center-based services to be more effective. Due to this study, CARD created their center-based ABA model that is used by most ABA providers. CARD also conducted a study in 2021 on the effectiveness of telehealth-based ABA. The study showed it was effective for all ages, and they are using this to increase ABA, and now they are developing more ABA software to help with ABA. A lot of ABA. Using this research, they developed Skills, a web-based tool that provides a skill assessment, individualized treatment plans design, and progress tracking with automated graphs and charts. In other words, they are responsible for the abuse that PTSD for a lot of autistic children and adults. Their mission statement. CARD leads the world in effective treatment of autism, guided by science and inspired by compassion to help people with autism and their families thrive. So really do look at my ABA article. I will be doing a podcast redoing that article, reading it out loud, and really diving into how it has affected me and how it has affected my parenting choices. And a little spoiler, none of my kids have ever received ABA, and they are doing just fine. They're all in school, they're all thriving, and they're all happy. And I am really happy that I was able to spare them the pain that I went through. That's why my heart breaks for these kids who have to go through this. That's why I'm so loud about it. All right. Legislation. CARD also is involved with autism-related legislation such as the CARES Act and Battling Autism Act. Dr. Graham Pesha has advocated for mandated coverage of ABA. Their primary goal is to increase ABA participation to have as many autistic children go through this barbaric practice as possible. CARD changing hands often. On April 13th, 2018, CARD was acquired by the Blackstone Group. Graham Pesha and CARD management invested in CARD along with Blackstone, with Graham Pesha serving as CEO until December 2019. What they didn't say in this article that I found out later is that Blackstone Group owns 70% of the company, and I will explain why in a minute. In December 2019, Graham Pesha was replaced by Anthony Kilgore in a board role. In February 2022, Kilgore resigns for reasons not specified, and I could not find them anywhere. We all know how well I can research. And replaced by Jennifer Webster. There was a study done on the reason for this, and this is discussed later in the article, along with the specifics of CARD. Documentary. So, in 2008, CARD produced and distributed a documentary called Recovery, Autism Spectrum and Its Return. It was about four children who went through ABA. They claimed that they had been fully recovered as a result of CARD's program. ABA just teaches children to mask, and that's it. And it's really hard for the children who have the inability to mask. Masking is a privilege, but there's a big but there. Those who are able to do it have severe ADHD, depression, and other mental health issues. The documentary was directed and edited by Michelle Jackie with Graham Pesha. They won Best Documentary Award in the 2008 Director's Chair Film Festival. CARD and their HIPAA breach. For those who are not in the United States or unfamiliar with the laws here, HIPAA stands for the Health Insurance Portability Accountability Act. So basically, it protects private information, private healthcare information, and it can only be shared with insurance, subpoena, being compelled by the court, etc. Otherwise, you cannot talk about someone's healthcare information. Like, I can't tell you what someone did at work and name them. I just can't. Well, I mean, while I was working there, and I wouldn't do that anyway. That's not up to me. It's up to them. They are people, and the place I used to work at sometimes forgets that. CARD experienced a HIPAA breach when, as part of a recent update to its patient billing systems, the third-party vendor responsible for generating patient invoices incorrectly made a computer error, which resulted in certain caregivers receiving an invoice for services for an unrelated patient. They did not disclose how many people were affected. They report the problem as confined to January 2023 billing statements for patient cost sharing amounts. This incident was not on the HHS breach tool. The type of information that was involved: patient name, CARD internal reference number, payment history, which includes insurance payments, patient payments, adjustments, account balance. No sense of the banking or credit card information was compromised. No personal identifiable information was compromised. Social security number, address, phone number, email address. To be fair, a name is identifiable, but I mean, we all get what they mean. All right. So they all sent the letter. I'm going to read to you what this letter says. From CARD, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders. Notice of data breach dated on February 7th, 2023. Dear client, what happened? The Center for Autism and Related Disorders, CARD, deeply values its patients' relationships and it's devoted to safeguarding the privacy and security of its patients' information. CARD recently discovered that as part of a recent update to its patient billing systems, the third-party vendor responsible for generating the patient invoices incorrectly made a computer error, which resulted in certain caregivers receiving an invoice for services for an unrelated patient. What information was involved? The information generated on the billing invoice included the patient name, CARD internal reference number, and payment history, which includes insurance payments, patient payments, adjustments, and account balance. No credit card, debit card, or banking information was revealed. further. No personally identifiable data such as social security number, address, phone number, or email address were revealed. What we are doing. Upon learning of this incident, CARD immediately commenced an investigation for the purpose of determining its scope, the impact of its information systems, and the identities of those potentially affected. Fortunately, CARD has confirmed that this error only impacted January 2023 billing statements for patient cost sharing amounts. No other statements were affected. In addition, the specific software defect in the billing system has now been fixed by our third-party vendor as we continue to work with them to install additional controls and monitoring in place to eliminate similar issues going forward. While these types of incidents are not always completely preventable, we continue to strengthen and improve our security process and procedures. What you can do. To the extent that you were one of the families who received the incorrect patient statement, we would kindly ask that you destroy the document by completely shredding it and properly disposing it in your trash receptacle. All right, so what I hear is passing the buck, lack of testing, because if you're using new software, you test it first on something that doesn't go out to anybody. Like, for example, you create a fake email address and or a fake address and send an invoice to that address that would go back to the company, and you would see that it worked just fine. In the courthouse, so they have been involved with several lawsuits. First one is NORD versus the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, LLC. On August 22nd, 2022, a former employee of CARD, Cade Nord, filed a class action lawsuit against CARD because of the data breach. She said that her privacy was violated because of this. CARD filed a motion to compel arbitration and dismiss the case. The judge found it able to be solved without a hearing, so the court grants the motion and administratively closes the action pending the decision of the arbitrator. So I'm going to read to you the court document. NORD versus Center for Autism Related Disorders. Donna M. Ryu, Magistrate Judge. Order granting motion to compel arbitration. Plaintiff Cade Nord filed this punitive class action against her former employer, Center for Autism Related Disorders, LLC, CARD, alleging violations of her privacy rights after CARD suffered a data breach. CARD now moves to compel arbitration and dismiss the case. This matter is suitable for a resolution without a hearing for the following reasons. The court grants the motion and administratively closes its action pending the decision of the arbitrator. Background. CARD is a California corporation that provides healthcare remote clinical services, training programs, and specialized outpatient services at 221 locations in 24 states. NORD was a former CARD employee from June 2018 to June 2019. Declaration of Julie Eveland. In October 2020, CARD announced that it was the victim of a cyber attack in which highly sensitive personal information, personal identifiable information, and financial information was accessed. So this was a data breach. This is the only thing I could find on it. This information included clinical and treatment information, contact information, dates of birth, and insurance details. CARD had collected this information from punitive class members, including NORD, in connection with their employment or receiving healthcare services. NORD claims that her highly sensitive information was exposed in the data breach because CARD stored or shared this information. She claims further that CARD failed to comply with statutory obligations under the laws such as Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, and the California Confidentiality of Medical Information Act, CMIA, industry standards, and its own assurances that representations that it would keep this information confidential. She seeks to certify a nationwide class of individuals whose information was also exposed during the breach, including a subclass of California residents Nord alleges the claim for CMIA violations, negligence, invasion of privacy, breach of confidence, implied contract, and implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. California unfair competition law and unjust enrichment. When Nord was hired, the parties signed an arbitration agreement declared it is Card's standard practice for all employees to sign arbitration agreements during their onboarding process. Nord signed this agreement as part of her personnel file. This agreement expressly says that the top of the page, arbitration agreement at one, immediately following the title, is the following introduction in capital letters. Please note that this agreement has arbitration and class action waiver terms that give up the right to a court hearing or a jury trial or to participate in a class action. Arbitration is mandatory and is exclusive and only remedy for any and all disputes. Please carefully read sections 2, 3, and 8. Agreement at 1. The agreement provides the claims covered by this agreement are all claims and causes of action that the company may, in section 3, have against you or that you may have against the company or its officers, directors, employees, investors, owners, shareholders, and agents arising out of or related to employment relationship between us and otherwise including but not limited to the interpretation, validity, or performance of any employment agreement or any proprietary information, inventions agreement, or confidentiality agreement claims for breach of any contract or covenant expressed or implied, tort claims, claims for discrimination and or harassment, claims for wrongful termination, claims for failure to prevent discrimination or harassment, for failure to engage in the interactive process, failure for reasonably accommodate any actual or perceived disability, claims for violation of any federal, state, or other governmental law, statute, regulation, or ordinance, including but not limited to claims arising under 16 enumerated federal and state laws and regulations, or the issue of whether or not a dispute is arbitrable. Agreement 2. Parties also expressly waive their right to pursue their claims as a class action. Agreement 3. The agreement further provides that the parties understand by agreeing to binding an arbitration they are giving up their rights and may otherwise have to litigate through a court or have a trial by a judge or jury to be a party to a class or representative action and all rights of appeal. Agreement 8. Card now moves to compel arbitration of Nord's claims in accordance with the agreement. Nord filed an opposition to Card in which Card replied. Legal standard. The Federal Arbitration Act, the FAA, governs written arbitration agreements affecting interstate commerce, enacted for the purpose of enforcing written arbitration agreements according to their terms. The FAA embodies fundamental first principle that arbitration is a matter of consent, not coercion. Section 4 of the FAA ensures that private agreements to arbitrate are enforced according to their terms. Authorizing a party to arbitration agreement to petition a United States District Court for an order directing that the arbitration proceed in the matter provided for such an agreement. The FAA provides that arbitration agreement shall be valid, irrevocable, and enforceable save upon such grounds as exist at law, equity for revocation of any contract. Final clause known as the Savings Clause permits agreements to arbitrate be invalidated by general applicable contract offenses such as fraud, duress, unconscionably, but offers no refuge for defenses that apply only to arbitration that derive their meaning from the fact that an agreement to arbitrate is at issue. By terms, the FAA leaves no place for the exercise of discretion by a district court, but instead mandates the court District courts shall direct parties to proceed to arbitration on issues as to when the arbitration agreement has been signed. In deciding whether to compel arbitration under the FAA, a court's inquiry is limited to two gateway issues: whether a valid agreement to arbitrate exists, and if it does, whether the agreement encompasses the dispute at issue. If both conditions are met, the FAA requires the court to enforce the arbitration agreement in accordance with its terms. The parties can also agree by contract that an arbitrator rather than a court will resolve threshold arbitrary questions as well as underlying merits disputes. These gateway issues can be expressly delegated to the arbitrator where the parties clearly and unmistakably provide for it. Where the delegation provisions clearly and unmistakably delegated the question of arbitrability and the arbitrator of all claims, the court is required to enforce agreements according to their terms and let the arbitrator determine arbitrability. Where a party does not challenge delegation provisions specifically, rather than the enforceability of the agreement to arbitrate claims as a whole, court must enforce the delegation clause and leave any challenge validity of the agreement as a whole for the arbitrator. Discussion. Card moves to compel arbitration of Nord's claims because the agreement applies to the violations of federal and state laws and tort and negligent claims that arise out of her employment relationship and a confidentiality agreement. Nord does not dispute the existence of the agreement nor that she signed it. Rather, she contests the scope of enforceability of the agreement. Specifically, Nord argues that her claims do not arise out of her employment relationship because they deal with a data breach that occurred after she was no longer employed. And the language of the agreement states that it only applies to employment-related matters. She also argues that the agreement is procedurally and substantively unconscionable and thus unenforceable. For example, she argues that the agreement is procedurally unconscionable because it's a contract of adhesion and form contract that Nord played no part in drafting, nor did she have a chance to revise it. As to substantive conscionability, she argues that the agreement is so expansively drawn that it is one-sided. The agreement requires arbitration of all disputes enumerated in Section 2, which encompasses for all claims, including the issue whether or not dispute is arbitrable. Agreement 1, therefore, clearly and unmistakably delegates that the question of arbitrability of a claim or issue to the arbitrator. Neither party disputes the existence of this delegation clause, and nor does not challenge the enforceability of the clause specifically. Instead, Nord challenges the enforceability of the agreement as a whole. However, the agreement's delegation clause means that her issues relating to the scope and enforceability, including unconscionability of the agreement, must be addressed by the arbitrator and not this court. In order to have the federal court address her unconscionability challenge, Nord would have to argue that the agreement to delegate an arbitrator her conscionability claim was itself unconscionable. Card also moved to dismiss the action or, in alternative, stay the action in its entirety pending the completion of arbitration proceedings where a dispute is subject to arbitration under the terms of a written agreement. The district court shall stay the trial of action until such arbitration has been had in accordance with terms of the agreement. Although the Ninth Circuit has held courts have discretion under Section 3 to dismiss claims that are subject to arbitration agreement, the court finds it appropriate to stay the action pending the outcomes of the party's arbitration proceedings. For case management reasons, the court will accomplish this by administratively closing the case. To reopen the case, the parties are directed to file a joint status report within 2 weeks of completion of any arbitration. Conclusion. For the foregoing reasons, the court grants Card's motion to compel arbitration and stays this action in its entirety pending the final resolution of the arbitration. The clerk shall administratively close the case. The parties may reopen the case by filing a joint status report within 2 weeks of completion of any arbitration. So it is so ordered. So even though that she was trapped by this agreement that she was forced to sign when she started her employment there, the judge is doing what he can within the agreement. After that, we're going to take another break. Second lawsuit. Taryn, it looks like an Italian name. I hope I don't butcher it. Taryn Sakatella. Sakatella et al. Versus Center for Autism and Related Disorders, LLC. On May 24th, 2023, Taryn Sakatella filed a labor standard lawsuit against CARD. The case was filed in the U.S. District Court's California Central District Court. The judge presiding over the case is David Carter and Autumn Spaeth. So I'm going to go over the docket entries. It gives pretty much a nutshell of what is going on because there's a lot in this case. And I have attached all pertaining documents so you can read them in full. So the docket entries. On May 24th, 2023, the complaint was received and assigned a receipt number of ACACDC-3537462. A certificate of interest parties was filed by the plaintiffs, Taryn Sakatella and Christina Smith. Civil cover sheet was filed by the plaintiffs. Request for clerk to issue summons on complaint number one filed by the plaintiffs. On May 25th, 2023, a notice of assignment to District Judge James Sienna and Magistrate Judge Autumn Spaeth. Notice to parties of court-directed ADR program files. Notice to counsel reconsent to proceed before a United States magistrate judge. Taryn Sakatella and Christina Smith, we're reading one of the court documents, file this collective action complaint against the defendant. Center for Autism and Related Disorders, LLC, CARD, does 1 through 10 inclusive collectively defendants seeking all relief available under the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 as amended in 29 U.S. Code 201 at the FLSA on behalf of themselves and all current and former exempt class operations managers who worked at any defendant's locations in the United States at any time from May 24th, 2020 and the day of final judgment of this matter. Punitive collective members. The following allegations are based on personal knowledge as to the plaintiff's own conduct are made on information and beliefs to the act of others. Plaintiffs allege on the behalf of themselves and the punitive collective members who will opt into this action pursuant of the FLSA that they and other members are entitled to unpaid wages from defendants for overtime work which they did not receive overtime premium pay as required by law, liquidated damages under the FLSA, and reasonable attorney fees and costs of this action. This court has subject matter jurisdiction over the plaintiff's claims pursuant to 28 United States Code 1331 and 1337. This court has jurisdiction over plaintiff's claim under the FLSA pursuant to 29 United States Code 216B. CARD is subject to personal jurisdiction in California. CARD maintains places of business in California. Venue is proper in the United States District Court for Central District of California, Southern Division, pursuant to 28 United States Code 1391, because CARD is a resident of the district and maintains its principal place of business in the district. Parties. Plaintiff Taryn Sakatella was at all relevant times an adult individual residing in Portland, Oregon. During all relevant times, Sakatella was employed by the defendants as an operations manager from on or about July 2018 until or about September 2020 at CARD's office in Portland, Oregon. During her employment as operations manager, Sakatella regularly worked 50 to 60 hours per week or more. As just one example, during the week of June 8th, 2020, Sakatella worked at least 50 hours. Sakatella did not receive overtime pay during her employment as operations manager. Sakatella's written consent to join this action is attached hereto as Exhibit A. Plaintiff Christina Smith was at all relevant times adult individual residing in Vacaville, California and Tigard, Oregon. During all relevant time, Smith was employed by the defendants as operation manager from on or about January 2020 until or about September 2021 at Card's offices in Vacaville, California and Tigard, Oregon. During her employment as operation manager, Smith regularly worked 50 to 60 hours per week or more. As just one example, during the week of June 7th, 2021, Smith worked at least 50 hours. Smith did not receive overtime pay during her employment as operations manager. Smith's written consent to join this action is attached as Exhibit B. Defendants. Card is a California corporation that is headquartered in Garden Grove, California. The true names and capacities of the person or entities, whether an individual or a corporate associate or otherwise, sued herein does 1 through 10 inclusive, are currently known as plaintiffs, who therefore sues defendants by such fictitious names. Plaintiffs are informed and believe, and based thereon, allege that each defendant designed herein as a DOE is legally responsible for some matter for the lawful acts referred herein. Plaintiffs will seek leave of the court to amend this collective action complaint to reflect true names of capacities of the defendants designed hereinafter, does when such entities become known as such. Card and DOE defendants shall be referred collectively as defendants. Defendants provide assessment and treatment for individuals with autism and its office locations nationwide. Defendants directly or indirectly employ operations managers in approximately 130 locations across multiple states, including California. Relevant, defendants have been employers within the meaning of 203D of the FLSA 29 United States Code 203D. At all times relevant, defendants have been enterprises within the meaning of 203R of the FLSA 29 United States Code 203R. At all times relevant, defendants have been enterprises engaged in commerce or production of goods for commerce within the meaning of 203S1 of the FLSA because the defendants have had employees engage in commerce or in the production of goods for commerce or employees handling, selling, or otherwise working on goods or materials that have moved or were produced for the commerce of by any person. Defendants have had and still has its gross volume sales made or business done of not less than $500,000. At all times relevant, plaintiffs and punitive collective members have been engaged in commerce or in the production of goods for commerce required by 29 United States Code 206 to 207. Defendants issued paychecks to plaintiffs and punitive collective members during their employment. Defendants directed the work of the plaintiffs and punitive collective members and benefited from the work performed that it suffered or permitted from them. Plaintiff and punitive collection members worked in excess of 40 hours per work week without receiving overtime compensation as required by the FLSA. Pursuant to defendants' policies and patterns or practices, defendants did not pay plaintiffs and punitive collective members proper overtime wages for hours they worked for its benefit of access of 40 hours in a work week. Factual allegations. Consistent with the defendant's policies and patterns or practices, plaintiffs and punitive collective members regularly work in excess of 40 hours per work week without being paid overtime wages. Plaintiff and punitive collective members perform the same or substantially similar primary job duties. Although labeled as managers, plaintiffs and punitive collective members were not primarily responsible for true management functions. To the contrary, the plaintiffs and the punitive collective members spend the vast majority of their work days performing non-exempt job functions such as answering phones, scheduling patients' appointments, giving tours of the facility, checking in patients, accepting payments, submitting prior authorizations, and basic clerical work. Defendants staff their centers leanly to minimize labor costs, such as plaintiffs and punitive collective members are only non-clinical employees staffed at their centers. Thus, Defendants heavily rely on the plaintiffs and punitive collective members to handle all sales, customer service job functions at the center. Therefore, plaintiffs and punitive collective members regularly work in excess of 40 hours per work week. Plaintiffs and punitive collective members' primary duties do not differ substantially from the duties of non-exempt hourly paid administrative employees. Plaintiffs and punitive collective members' primary job duties do not include hiring employees, firing employees, setting employees' rates of pay, scheduling other employees, or disciplining other employees. Plaintiffs and punitive collection members do not exercise a meaningful degree of independent discretion with respect to the exercise of their duties. Plaintiffs and punitive collective members are closely supervised by their managers, corporate level employees, and defendants' policies and procedures define and circumscribe plaintiffs and punitive collective members' work. Pursuant to centralized company-wide policy pattern and practice, defendants classify all operations managers as exempt from coverage of overtime provisions of the FLSA and applicable state laws. Thus, plaintiffs and punitive collective members have not been paid overtime for the overtime hours that they regularly work. Defendants have not performed a person-by-person analysis of every operation manager's job duties when making the decision to classify all of them and other employees holding comparable positions with different titles as exempt from the FLSA overtime protections as well as the protections of applicable state laws. Upon information and belief, defendants' unlawful conduct described in this collective action complaint is pursuant to a corporate policy or practice of minimizing labor costs by violating the FLSA. Defendants' failure to pay overtime wages for work performed by plaintiffs and punitive collective members of access of 40 hours per work week has been willful because defendants knew or should have known plaintiffs' putative collective members do not qualify for any particular exemption under the FLSA and nevertheless chose not to pay them overtime wages. Defendants' unlawful conduct have been widespread, repeated, and consistent. FLSA collective allegations. Defendants are liable under the FLSA for inter alia failing to properly pay overtime wages to plaintiffs and pursuant collective members. There are numerous similarly situated current from former operations managers and other employees holding comparable positions but different titles who have not been paid proper overtime wages in violation of the FLSA who would benefit from issuance of court-supervised notice that this lawsuit and the opportunity to join it. Thus, the notice should be sent to the putative collective members pursuant to 29 United States Code 216B. Those similarly situated employees are known as defendants and are readily identifiable and can be located through defendants' records. Plaintiffs and putative collective members of all whom regularly work more than 40 hours in a work week or were employed as operations managers by defendants at their office locations. Defendants have failed to pay plaintiffs and punitive collective members overtime compensation for the hours they have worked over 40 hours in a work week. Defendants have failed to keep accurate records of all hours worked by plaintiffs and the punitive collective members. Throughout the relevant period, it has been defendants' policy, pattern, or practice to require, suffer, or permit plaintiffs and putative collective members to work in excess of 40 hours per work week without paying them overtime wages for all overtime hours worked. Defendants assigned the work that plaintiffs and pursuant collective members have performed, or defendants have been aware of the work week they have performed. The work performed plaintiffs and putative collective members constitutes compensable work under the FLSA and is not primarily post-liminally or de minimis. Defendants are aware or should have been aware that the FLSA requires them to pay plaintiffs and putative collective members an overtime premium for the hours worked in excess of 40 hours per work week. Defendants have intentionally, willfully, and regularly engaged in company-wide policy, pattern, or practice of violating the FLSA with respect to the plaintiffs and putative collective members which policy, pattern, or practice was authorized, established, promulgated, or ratified by defendant's corporate headquarters. This policy, pattern, or practice includes, but is not limited to, willfully failing to record all of the time plaintiffs and putative collective members have worked for the benefit of the defendants. Willfully failing to keep accurate time records as required by the FLSA. Willfully failing to credit plaintiffs and putative collective members for all hours worked, including overtime hours, consistent with the requirements of the FLSA, and willfully failing to pay plaintiffs and putative collective members wages for all hours worked, including overtime wages for hours in excess of 40 hours per work week. First clause of action, Fair Labor Standards Act, unpaid overtime wages brought on behalf of the plaintiffs and putative collective members. Plaintiff and putative collective members reallege and incorporate by reference all prior paragraphs as if they were set forth again herein. Defendants have engaged in a widespread pattern of practice of violating the FLSA and detailed in this collective action complaint. Plaintiffs and pursuant collective members have consented in writing to be parties of this action. The overtime wages provision set forth in the 29 United States Code 201 apply to the defendants. At all relative times, plaintiffs and pursuant collective members have been engaged in commerce or the production of goods for commerce within the meaning of 29 United States Code 206A and 207A. Defendants are employers engaged in the commerce or the production of goods for commerce within meaning of 29 United States Code 206A and 207A. At all times relevant, plaintiffs and putative collective members have been employees within the meaning of 29 United States Code 203E and 207A. Defendants have failed to pay plaintiffs and putative collective members the overtime wages to which they are entitled under the FLSA. Defendants' violations of the FLSA, as described in the collective action complaint, have been intentional and willful. Defendants have not made a good faith effort to comply with the FLSA with respect to the compensation of plaintiffs and putative collective members. Because defendants' violation of the FLSA have been willful, a 3-year statute of limitations applies to pursuant 29 United States Code 255, as may be told by equity or agreement of the parties. As a result, defendants' violations of the FLSA, plaintiffs and putative collective members have suffered damages by being denied overtime wages in accordance with 29 United States Code 201. As a result of the unlawful acts of the defendants, plaintiffs and putative collective members have been deprived of overtime compensation and other wages in the amounts to be determined at trial and are entitled to recover such amounts, liquidated damages, prejudgment interest, attorney's fees, costs, and other compensation pursuant to 29 United States Code 216B. Prayer for relief. Wherefore, plaintiffs individually and on behalf of all other similarly situated putative collective members pray for the following relief. At the earliest possible time, conditionally certify putative collective and allow plaintiffs to give notice of this collective actions or court issue such notice informing all similarly situated operations managers of nature of this action and their right to join this lawsuit. Certification of all of the collective consisting of plaintiffs and similarly situated operations managers. Designation of plaintiffs as representatives of putative collective and counsel of record as class counsel. Unpaid wages and liquidated damages in the maximum amount allowed by 29 United States Code 201 and the supporting United States Department of Labor regulations and the employer's share of the FICA, FUTA, and state unemployment insurance and any other required employment taxes. Pre-judgment interest and post-judgment interest as provided by law. Attorney's fees and costs of the action include expert fees, payment of service rewards to plaintiffs in recognition of the services they have rendered and will continue to render to collective, and such relief as the court deems just and proper. Trial by jury. Pursuant to Rule 38B of the Federal rules of civil procedures, plaintiffs demand a trial by jury on all issues so triable. So not only were they, not only were they abusing children, but they weren't paying their employees. This really shouldn't come as a surprise, but dang. All right, so we're going to take another mental health break because that was a lot. Remember to drink your water, take your meds, use the bathroom, and stretch. This court case is still pending, and as soon as I hear more, I will update. Next section, bankruptcy. So this is what alerted me to look more into CARD. Bankruptcy. On June 12, 2023, CARD filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Judge David R. Jones presides over this case. They said that the pandemic severely hurt their business. It faced several industry-wide headwinds they had to restructure. So we'll read the application of Venegroff Williams Incorporated and VWI Revenue Cycle Management Incorporated for allowance and payment of administrative expense claim pursuant to the sections of 365 and 502 of the Bankruptcy Code. The creditors Venegroff Williams Incorporated and VWI Revenue Cycle Management, a Florida corporation, together VWI, and through their undersigned counsel and pursuant to sections 365 and 502 of Title 11, the United States Code, hereby apply this court for entry an order allowing and directing the payment of certain administrative expenses for post-petition services rendered and accepted by the debtor Center for Autism-Related Disorders, and in support, therefore, respectfully as follows. The court has jurisdiction to hear and decide this motion pursuant to Section 1334 of Title 28 of the United States Code. This matter is a court proceeding pursuant in Section 157B2 of the Title 28 of the United States Code. Venue is proper in this district pursuant to Section 1408 and 1409 of Title 28 of the United States Code. On June 11, 2023, the debtor and other related entities filed voluntary petitions for relief under Chapter 11 or Title 11 of the United States Code, Sections 101, the Bankruptcy Code, thereby initiating these jointly administered cases. Upon the information and belief, the debtor is continuing to operate its business and manage its assets as a debtor in possession pursuant to Sections 1107A and 1108, the Bankruptcy Code. On July 28, 2023, this court entered its order approving the debtor's disclosure statement and confirming the joint Chapter 11 plan of Center for Autism-Related Disorders, LLC, and its debtor affiliates, the confirmation order. As the date of this filing, the debtor has not yet filed a notice of plan effective date or notice of substantial summation of the plan. Prior to the petition date, VWI and the debtor entered into a certain master service agreement dated July 1st, 2020, as supplemented by a statement of work and the statement of work. The agreement is confidential and proprietary and thus not attached to this application, but a copy can be produced upon request subject to the appropriate safeguards. Since the petition date, the debtor has continued to use VWI services as provided for by the agreement. The debtor has benefited from VWI's post-petition services, and the debtor owes VWI for such services in accordance with the terms of the agreement. Pursuant to the terms of the agreement and orders, this court, the debtor has made certain partial post-petition payments to VWI for post-petition services rendered in an egregious amount of $226,443.21. Notwithstanding such payments, VWI is still owed $776,779.06 for post-petition services provided to the debtor for the period ending August 31st, 2023. Copies of the invoices reflecting the amounts invoiced for such post-petition services are attached to hereto as Exhibit A. The agreement is executory contract under which debtor has important performance obligations and unpaid services were rendered post-petition and accepted by the debtor prior to the debtor taking any steps to terminate such contract. The debtor received the benefit of VWI services provided consistent with the contractually agreed amounts due set forth above. Additionally, for the avoidance of doubt, VWI has previously offered to extend the debtor on a non-contractual courtesy credit in the month amount of $156, beginning of December 2022. Through the present, the condition both upon the debtor confirming the changes in the technology they employed in operating its business and agreed to continuity of long-term relationship. As VWI's agreement was rejected and the debtor failed to employ the necessary technology improvements, both conditions to the offer of a courtesy credit never materialized. VWI demands all contractual post-petition amounts owed consistent with the agreement and this application. According to VWI, is entitled to the allowance of administrative expense to the value of the contractual beliefs received and accepted by the debtor, which the value should be measured by the reference to terms in the agreement. Wherefore, VWI respectfully requests this court enter an order granting this application, allowing an administrative expense unpaid amounts for the post-service rendered under the agreement in the amount of $776,779.06, and granting any and all further relief as necessary and just. Dated August 22nd, 2023. So that was not the petition. That was a petition for the private investment partner to get what is theirs. So we have the document history of the bankruptcy case. On Friday, October 13th, 2023, Judge Christopher M. Lopez was added to the case. Judge David R. Jones was recused. On Monday, October 16th, Certificate of Service Supplemental Notice of Entry of an Order Approving Debtors, Disclosure Statement and Confirming the Joint Chapter 11, Plan of Center for Autism and Related Disorders, and its debtor affiliates, and occurrence of the effective date of June 12th, 2023. On Thursday, October 19th, there was a final application for compensation for Quinn Emanuel U. Carton Sullivan, special counsel. As a result to this bankruptcy, Card is sold back to its original owner. On July 27th, 2023, bankruptcy court has approved the sale of Card. A successful bid of $48.5 million, and the two companies are included with the sale. They are Pentagram, a nonprofit led by Card founder and former CEO Doreen Grand Pesha, and consortium made up of a private equity firm, Adax Group, and its portfolio companies, including Proud Moments ABA and News Story. It is thought that Card will split into multiple companies. Pentagon will pay $37.4 million and control 10 Card state markets and other business assets. Whatever is left over is split between Audex's portfolio companies for $11.1 million. As soon as the sale became finalized, the bankruptcy for Card will continue. Card is worth a substantially amount, quite a bit more, which will be discussed in a few minutes. How the bankruptcy affected the ABA industry. When Card's bankruptcy has affected ABA industry as a whole, they are the largest ABA companies. One representative of Card said, "I'd say that Card transition is more indicative of where we are in the market. It is of where the market is going. Seems like they are in denial." Isn't where the market is going. They're in denial. They said that Card is an isolated example of behavioral health company needing a court order to restructure because they ran out of money. They are having less kids come in. They are not making as much. They're cutting labor. So they have strained the ABA sector. A stagnant fee for service for reimbursement rates, and along with rising inflation and interest rates. Some companies had to make a very hard decision to cut jobs in order to stay afloat. There were others in hyper-growth mode went to slow and steady focus on focusing on organic growth. This means that the deal volumes have been going down during 2023. If you look at the graph in the blog post, you will see that 2023 in quarter one went down by a lot. There are less kids going for ABA, which is amazing news. It's really good news because less kids are being abused in that way. Being a part of Card's bankruptcy, the majority shareholder Blackstone agreed to sell its stake to Doreen Grand Pesce, the founder and former CEO, for $25 million. Card was valued at $700 million, so they lost quite a bit of money. Blackstone had 70% of the company. So they didn't even own most of it because they went to private equity and they got themselves in trouble. Card was not alone in the ABA providers that took advantage of a large investment in the market. They bit off more than they could chew. They borrowed from private equity investors. In April 2023, the company's annual earning before interest, taxes, and depreciation, amortization, EBITA, were $22 million loss. Its net loss was $82 million, while the revenue totaled $160 million for the same period. They had to pay back what businesses they invested in Card, and they did not plan for it. They saw autistic kids as cash cows and could keep it up. This is encouraging to see that the volume of kids has gone down this year. We can only hope it's because autistic adults speak out about the abuse. The industry is hurting, and that's what counts. The industry is using autistic kids as cash cows. Autism services became a hot market for private equity buyouts due to the legislation that requires insurance to pay out for ABA. When health insurance for autism was widespread due to legislation, the money was flowing in once coverage was mandated. All they saw was money signs. There were 12 private equity owned autism services in the service chain in the study, at least 30,000 people at 1,300 locations. This study was done on Card. This study was called Pocketing Money Meant for Kids, Private Equity in Autism Services. Almost all private equity owners are a large firm investing in anything. This can range from fossil fuels to retail stores. They have little to no experience with anything related to autism. That's just as bad as ABA to begin with, not going into something and you could really hurt somebody. Parents who fought for health insurance coverage for their autistic kids expected the funds to be used to expand access to high quality treatment. They didn't expect firms to move in, skim reimbursements to pay high salaries to executives, and deliver millions to private equity partners. The findings of this study. Between 2017 and 2022, private equity firms completing 85% of all buyouts of autism service providers. This is a rate not found in any other industry. Private equity firms now dominate the market. On average, the 12 firms in this study, Card included, sold their service chains and to other private equity firms every 4 years. After the buyout, private equity-owned autism service chains have less staff training and supervision. These undermine both job quality and care quality. Some private equity owners prioritize patients who can get higher billing rates or states with higher reimbursement rates. This care is inaccessible, not just ABA, but OT, speech therapy, and physical therapy as well. While having all this funding for ABA is awful, but this really hurts kids who need other types of therapy as well. While it is good that less kids are getting ABA, the companies and private equity investors are using kids as cash cows, not only serving profits, not kids. We, as the autistic community, said this was going on and no one would listen. We always said ABA was a big business. They thought they said, you're crazy. Sorry to use that word, but that's what was said to me. You know, you want everyone to be autistic. You want no one to be able to function in the real world. Tell you what, these kids, when they grow up, develop PTSD and unable to care for themselves at some point. Instead of just supporting your child, none of my kids went through ABA. I could say, hey, Bug, can you make me some eggs if I'm not feeling well? And he knows how to do it. So that's all on card. I will update if I have any more. Don't be afraid to speak your truth. Please message me if you hear anything. And yeah, stay loud and proud, whatever that means to you. And don't be afraid to live your truth.
Don't forget to subscribe or follow on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Keep on speaking your truth and never let your flame burn out. Thank you for listening.